Hello, this is Janet Gallen with Love Letters Live, and I have asked Holly Peterson, who spoke not too long ago about bullying, is back with me today to talk about domestic violence. And if you haven't heard her presentation on bullying, I encourage you to do so. This woman has taken on two of the really most horrible issues in civilization, things that you would not think one person could do to another, but they do it by the droves. And Holly is a brave, intelligent woman who is taking this on as her personal, what would you say? Well, it's your life's work.
I'm passionate about it.
Okay, so go ahead. Talk about Dream House, if you would. Tell us what that was.
Yeah, so the Dream House program, it's a transitional housing program, part of Jewish Family and Children's Services. And it's a program for women and their children who are coming out of domestic violence situations.
How do you find out about them to get them into Dream House?
They're usually referred through an emergency shelter.
I see.
So
okay.
They come from an emergency shelter where they stay maybe 1 month, 3 months, and then they come to our program where they can have a longer period of time to stabilize. So they stay anywhere from a year and a half, 2 years, and while they're there, they receive counseling, they receive assistance with getting into school, getting job training, vocational training. The idea is for them to be able to leave the program and have the tools and the skills and the resources they need to be self-sufficient.
I'm guessing that one of those tools and skills is how to get rid of the need to be treated violently.
Right.
What do we say about this?
That's very important because a lot of times these women do have a belief that they don't deserve to be treated well. They sometimes don't recognize the signs that the relationship is turning into a domestic violence situation.
That's a really good point because things can happen bit by bit, and before you know it, you're a bloody mess with your teeth knocked out.
Right.
Uh-huh. So what are those signs that you teach them to look for?
So
let's let people know and
pass
the word around.
Absolutely. So an intensity whirlwind romance where the partner is wanting to spend every moment with the woman, where there are maybe at first just subtle examples of control, like telling her what she should wear or shouldn't wear, who she can spend time with, who she can't spend time with.
That's a big one, that spending time, because isn't that a way really of isolating a person from her? Okay.
And isolation and control and isolating these women from their support networks is a big component of domestic violence relationships.
It's the first step to imprisonment, really.
Absolutely.
Isn't it?
Okay, absolutely. And it's part of why they need the kinds of resources that a transitional housing program can provide, is because they're cut off from the resources that they would otherwise have access to in a healthy relationship. So resources now, like not only friends and support, but also the ability to work and go to school and really develop the skills and the tools they need to be self-sufficient.
You say that you get referred by shelters. So you've got a line open. So you're only getting a handful of what really exists, I'm guessing.
Right.
Isn't that awful?
We are.
I mean, wonderful that you've got those, but
there's such a need, too. There's really a shortage of both emergency shelters and transitional housing, and also just affordable housing in general for all families, but particularly these families. So we're serving up to 12 families at a time. And so you can tell that that's really a drop in the bucket of what is really needed.
And so when you talk about housing, affordable housing, we talked before and I was very upset and I would like to give vent to my frustration at even hearing this, that for some reason, well, I just assumed that these women became friendly and formed friendships.
Absolutely.
And then when it's time to move out, they've got children very often. Do they get to go in together on an apartment so that they can babysit for each other if one works during the day and the other works at night, or just one needs 2 hours of sanity to go out to a movie? And you said no.
So it's a good point. We really, part of why a transitional housing program for survivors of domestic violence is important is because it allows them to build community with each other. And they can move out on their own when they're ready to graduate. However, if they do move in with each other, then that means that they don't qualify for some of the rental subsidy programs. So those programs will give them a certain amount of money toward rent each month for a year, year and a half, but only if they're living on their own with their kids. So they can't have a roommate.
But a roommate, I mean, in particular, two women who have already, by the way, also they can remind each other of the lessons they've learned.
Right.
And would save money, save government money,
right,
and give the moral support that they need rather than for them to feel isolated. I mean, that's doing the same thing that the bad boyfriends are doing. It's isolating them.
Right.
I hate to put it like that, but
the support is crucial.
It's awful.
It's crucial for these women.
And what's the government thinking on this? Do you know?
I wish I did know. I don't know if it's protection against having them move in with another romantic partner that may repeat that cycle of domestic violence. I don't know if that's
it. Why don't they just ask first? Oh, well.
Good question.
All right.
Good questions.
We can go on to something else, I guess. But why don't you talk more about, I'd like to know, is, not that you don't have your hands full with bullying and this mm-hmm. in life, but who talks about this kind of thing in high school where girls are starting to date?
Mm-hmm.
About what makes a potentially dangerous relationship. And at what point are you allowed to call the police or say, get out of my house or mm-hmm. something, or smack back?
Yeah.
How does all that work?
It's a good question. And I've seen more high schools bring in curriculum on healthy relationships because teen dating violence actually have similar rates to
really?
The rates that domestic violence is happening with adult relationships.
How do those take place? What do you see in those?
In the dating relationships,
yes.
The teen, a lot of the control,
mm-hmm.
so telling the girlfriend what she can and can't wear, trying to monopolize her time so that she's not spending time with her friends, and then it can escalate to more of the physical, a slap, a push, a punch.
But are those two different people, though? I mean, I can see telling a girl what she can wear and what she can't is just mm-hmm. being kind of male ignorance and thinking that is how you be a boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Where does that line come?
That's a good question. It's not always a warning sign that mm-hmm. it's going to escalate to something
yeah.
worse, but I think it's something to be able to identify as a potential problem, and
mm-hmm.
I think that girls need to feel empowered to say back to their boyfriend, I'm not comfortable
mm-hmm.
with you telling me what I can and can't wear,
yes.
and seeing how he responds to that. And if he responds with, okay, you're right, that's a little out of line, or here's why I asked that, I feel insecure, and he's able to kind
of... Or I really like that on you.
That's
yeah.
right, yeah. And I think, right, it depends on
right.
if it's, I want you to wear this because you look really nice in it versus I don't want you to wear this because it shows off too much of your body and it makes me feel jealous.
Uh-huh.
Because then
okay.
other boys can see
yes.
you.
What should belong to me.
Right.
Uh-huh, interesting, okay. What are some, well, I mean, yeah, I'm just so overwhelmed at this whole issue because I've seen documentaries where, and read, you read things in the news where men come after their former wives and their girlfriends and they kill them.
Mm-hmm.
And they, yes.
And it can be part of the cycle is when a woman starts to remove herself and become more stronger and more powerful,
mm-hmm.
then it can escalate the perpetrator to act.
What do you think it is in the men who do this that make them do this? You would think that a woman who's really more independent would be seen as really a godsend and not some burden.
Mm-hmm. It's control. And
yes,
it's control and the deep feeling of inadequacy and helplessness and powerlessness within the man. And so needing a partner that he can control, that he can have power over, and who submits to his wishes.
Oh, you know, I read once that one of the worst days for spousal abuse, for wife abuse, was after the Loma Prieta earthquake.
Mm.
And a couple of other incidences where nobody has control.
Right.
But the men who felt it
mm-hmm.
evidently were acting on something.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you talk a little bit about what goes on from the time a woman checks into Dream House?
Okay. So the process is really helping these families to stabilize from the crisis situation that they've left. So they've had some period of time to stabilize in the shelter often, but a shelter environment is not as warm and cozy and home-like as our house is. So immediately
okay.
they feel at home. Like this is,
Is this home a secret location just like the
shelter?
It
is. Okay. Yes. So it's a confidential location, mm-hmm. and that's very important because most of the women who move in there have restraining orders against their mm-hmm. exes mm-hmm. and need that safety. And then they're immediately connected with our case manager who starts to meet with them on a regular basis and identifies what needs they have. Most of them need or want to be in some kind of counseling, so we get them connected to a therapist. We find out if the kids also need therapy because many of them, if they haven't been physically abused themselves, they've at least witnessed it.
Are they terrified?
Terrified. Oh. And they also need help with adjusting to a whole new mm-hmm. life because they've gone from the home to the shelter and now to this transitional housing
program.
What do
you think it's like for them? Obviously, they go to school, or I shouldn't mm-hmm. say obviously about anything in the world, but they go to school. They go to public school in the neighborhood of the dream house, right?
They do, yes, most
of them. And so are they allowed not to say where they live? I mean, how does this work?
It's tough. We have to explain to the kids who are old enough to be able to memorize an address uh-huh. and talk with their friends about where they live, the importance of their safety and the safety of the other families in the house. So I think as kids get older and as they move toward middle school, it does make their lives look different than
yes.
other kids.
But also the schools have to know the addresses, right? I mean, for their registration.
No, they, so we,
because that would be a slip up.
Right. So we give them our administrative office as the address.
Oh.
And if we have to write a letter explaining that they live in the neighborhood, me or the case manager writes a letter and says they live in an undisclosed location
uh-huh,
in this neighborhood, uh-huh. and here's why
and
we can't disclose.
Understands why.
Right.
Okay.
Yes, we haven't had a problem.
Okay,
with that.
Good. Now, are the children feeling, oh, I could just think this is so, maybe it's not so sad. Maybe just somehow when you hear other people's troubles, it seems even sadder because they're dealing with it, so that's already a plus.
Yeah.
But children who can't have their friends over.
Yeah.
After school, can they go to other children's homes?
They absolutely can and do. And they're also, most of them in some sort of after school program or childcare program. So they're getting a lot of time to socialize with their peers.
Oh, I see. Okay.
They're also getting a lot of time with their peers in the household. So we have a lot of kids in the household,
oh,
and we
okay.
have a beautiful playroom for them. We have an art activity group that happens every week. So they're getting
like
a lot
of their after-school friends.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes me feel a little bit better.
Absolutely. Yeah. We make sure that they're not isolated.
Do you want to tell us a couple of examples, you know, maybe just one history of mm-hmm. somebody that, why don't you do that to give us an example of what goes on?
Sure. So we had one woman who is, she immigrated here from China,
mm-hmm.
And her husband was also of Chinese descent, but an American citizen. And it was sort of a prearranged marriage. And when she got into it, realized pretty quickly that it was abusive. And not only abusive by, physically and emotionally abusive by the husband, but by his family who they were living with. So she was abused physically and emotionally by her husband, as well as her mother-in-law and father-in-law.
How did they join in?
They would, a lot of emotional abuse,
mm-hmm.
so try to keep her very much enslaved to the housework
uh-huh.
and serving them. And
feeling not worth much.
Feeling not worth anything.
Mm-hmm.
And her language, she wasn't learning mm-hmm. English. She wasn't working or going to school. And when her son came into the picture and she started to realize what it was doing to him, he was also being physically abused by the father and just witnessing all of the abuse that she was experiencing, that's when she said, I need to get out.
And where did she go?
So she went to an emergency shelter.
But how did she even know about it? Do you wonder?
I do wonder, actually, and I don't know how she found her first emergency shelter. That's a good question. But what courage it took her to do that, because
yes.
here she is new to this country. English skills.
Well,
know.
That just means it couldn't be worse. Whatever
right.
she found there would be better. So that's just pathetic
right.
enough.
Right. And so through the shelter program connected her to the CalWORKS program,
mm-hmm.
which is a program that provides cash aid and benefits and includes a welfare to work piece. So she got enrolled in school, improved her English, and is still in school right now, but has a much better chance of being able to. She's graduated from Dream House, lives on her own with her son through a rental subsidy program,
mm-hmm.
and is still working on her AA degree.
I saw a documentary many years ago that so gripped me. And the point of the documentary was that there are so many people right in our midst here in San Francisco who are in this predicament.
Yes.
And, you know, I've noticed myself, I walk down the street sometimes and I'll see some woman walking down the street with a child, mm-hmm. beautiful child, and I've even mentioned this to people, looking so sour.
Yeah.
And I think, you're living here in the sunshine, mm-hmm. it's a beautiful day, and you've got this beautiful little child or two, what are you looking so sour about?
Yeah.
Or just a beautiful young woman who looks miserable.
Mm-hmm.
And this documentary pointed out that some of these people are just in this exact predicament.
Yeah.
And how important it is, if you see somebody in your neighborhood, mm-hmm. for example, who always looks like this, just say hello.
Right.
And be a presence. Mm-hmm. So if they need to run for, I've stopped people on the street, actually, I'll get arrested someday, but and said, absolutely unasked for, are you all right?
Yeah.
Now, you know what? You won't be worse off for having done that.
Right. What's the worst that could happen?
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, if somebody falls apart in tears or collapses on in your arms, mm-hmm. you've done a good thing.
Right.
Don't let people who look constantly miserable go without a hello.
I think it's so important.
Okay.
Because we don't know anyone's stories.
Uh-huh.
And I think more acts of kindness could really help, particularly for these women who are so isolated.
So they know that there's a friendly person.
There's someone there.
They could come to you if they...
Uh-huh. Absolutely. Yeah, and I think it's a good point, too, that we... Domestic violence cuts across all...
Oh, yes.
All racial backgrounds, socioeconomic backgrounds, and it's not just the women who are
immigrants or ignorant or unschooled or
I mean those so the families who don't have as many resources, they're the ones that often need the services more because the women who are from a more affluent background have other support
but
not always.
Not always, because
yeah.
sometimes those very people have so much at stake to pretend that everything is looking great.
Right.
And women who are married to men who control the checkbook.
Right, so when they leave.
And they can't leave because they're afraid where to go and they don't want to give up.
Right.
The loveliness of the lives they lead. Ugh, it's such a mess.
It is.
Such
yeah.
a mess. I have a question
mm-hmm.
about love letters.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody, I think of really the healing powers of love
yeah.
letters and what they can do for the people who write them and receive them.
Mm-hmm.
And I know we talked last time about love letters of apologies from children who had bullied others
mm-hmm.
and how cleansing that would be
right.
and is. And I'm thinking, somebody once told me that she was in a group and each person had to write a love letter to herself in this group
mm-hmm.
and then pass it to the person to her, stamped and addressed,
mm-hmm.
pass it to the person to her right.
Mm-hmm.
And when that person felt in the air somehow, I don't know how, that this person needed a love letter of encouragement from herself,
mm-hmm.
she was to stick it in the mailbox.
Oh, I love that.
And it happens that this woman who told me this, it was mm-hmm. Kim Corbin, and she said it was so odd. She got this letter from herself, encouraging herself
mm-hmm.
on exactly the day she needed it.
Wow.
Now, the question is, don't we need it every day or any day?
Most of us do, yeah.
Yeah, so
often,
it would always,
yeah.
What about something like that?
I love it. I think especially for these women, their self-esteem has taken such a blow.
Mm-hmm.
And part of their healing when they're at Dream House is to be able to try to rebuild their sense of self. From themselves, because that's really what counts. I mean, you can hear praise and compliments and encouragement from others, but if you don't internalize it or don't believe it, it doesn't come from you, it's harder for it to have an impact. So I think it would be tremendously powerful for these women.
And
yeah.
you know, sometimes a love letter can be real short.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't have to be a long thing. I mean, it could even be, you know, dear Sally, congratulations, you finally left that son of a bitch.
Yep.
Love, Sally.
Right.
Just a little thing, and even mm-hmm. regularly.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to see more of this sort of thing.
I think it would be wonderful.
I'm glad. Mm-hmm. Okay. So what about you? If you were to write a love letter right now to somebody, if you were to write a love letter to the women at Dream House,
mm-hmm.
what would you say? A collective letter that they could post on the wall.
Mm-hmm. I would express my admiration for their courage I mean, what courage it takes to leave what's familiar, no matter how bad it is, it's still familiar, and go into the unknown and take the risk of learning so many new skills. Really, some of these women have said this is the first time they've been on their own. So when they graduate, it's their first apartment they've had on their own. And I have so much admiration for that courage. No, they're all ages. I would also want to express my, just how impressed I am by their ability to keep going as mothers.
I was going to ask about that.
And they're such powerful role models for their children, and I want them to know that.
Yes.
That them leaving, even if it feels hard, even if they're living in a housing program right now and they're just scraping by and they're students, that is such a powerful model for their children about doing what you need to do and being courageous
and
hard
work. You are such a good mother.
Absolutely.
Because you have done this very brave thing for your baby.
Yeah.
Yes. I think that's, you know, mothers do want to know that they've done something right.
Right. And how often do mothers get that praise and
just like
feedback?
That. Whatever you did was good.
Yeah.
Even in a miserable situation.
Right.
And that letter will be found the next generation and the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
And how would you feel yourself if it just came to light that your great-grandmother had been a tormented, abused, beaten woman? Or a great-great-grandmother, somebody you didn't know, and just found that out and found out that she had been brave enough to go out on her own with your great-grandmother and start over. Wouldn't you feel that's a wonderful pedigree of strength that you
Absolutely.
Come from?
Yeah, that's definitely something that you could look to, well, she did it, so I can do it.
Or she did that, and look at all the strength I come from. That's a genetic blessing.
Right, it's in my blood.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I tend to look ahead in writing love letters. I mean, the immediate is wonderful. The writing them is wonderful because you're bathing in the positive. But I also look at what it's going to mean a generation or two down the line because I have found letters. People have sent me letters that are four generations past.
Wow.
They last for as close to ever as we can count on.
No, it's
and they
amazing.
Last. They last longer than they do on your computer. And in videos.
Yeah.
You know, it used to be that I think it was acceptable for people to leave their wills in a videotape at one point. And it, I think, pretty quickly became not acceptable. It's not a legal document. First of all, it'll corrode.
Right.
And secondly, it can be tampered with.
Yeah.
But what you've written down in your own handwriting.
It's lasting.
And it can't be altered in any way that, you know, in any significant way that you don't find, obviously, if somebody's tampered with that, so never mind. So tell me also, what do you think the future of what you're doing is? I mean, will more people take this on?
I hope so. I hope if people understand how impactful it is to give these women a home, a place to heal, and the tools to be self-sufficient, I really hope that...
Well, what made Jewish Children and Family...
Jewish Family and Children's Services
start this.
There were passionate, very passionate board members
who
felt that they wanted to help these women,
so
these
families.
So that's
what it takes.
Yes. It takes the passion, because it's not easy.
No.
And it can be frustrating.
You've got to raise the money for it and find the,
But that passion and that understanding that it is so important. So it's...
How do you get the word out to other groups who are board members of agencies to start a component like this? Or you're just too busy doing what you do to add this on?
Right. There's, you know, I have to say about San Francisco is there's a lot of attention and energy around domestic violence prevention. And there's a wonderful group called the Domestic Violence Consortium that brings together groups, agencies that focus on domestic violence services.
Is there a website you'd like to offer for that, or do you know?
I don't know it off the top of my head, but it's the Domestic Violence Consortium, and it's
run... So if you Google that, you could...
You can look it up. It's run by Beverly Upton.
She
is fantastic. Talk about passion. That woman is passionate and powerful. And I think that community...
UPTON.
Yes.
If you want to Google her. Okay.
Yes, Beverly Upton. That community is growing, and there are new members that join it all the time. And it really is a voice for these families.
When the builders and land developers build apartments, there's no such thing as they have to have a certain amount for these women. Wouldn't that be nice?
That would be nice too, because there's definitely is yes. a shortage of affordable housing. Yeah.
But I mean, in particular for women who have left shelters.
No, absolutely.
Okay,
would be a
let's
great
see
idea.
That, San Francisco builders.
It's a great idea.
And also, what are hospitals obligated to report to someone when a woman comes in beaten?
Not if a woman is, my understanding is mm-hmm. not if a woman has come in beaten. Now, a child is another story.
Uh-huh.
But the hospitals have been very good about referring these women to the resources in the city.
Oh, good.
Very
so in
good.
Other words, they don't call the police, but they
no,
will. Uh-huh.
They will call one of the other, the shelters okay. or our agency. They've been very good about that.
It's very comforting to know that there is so much communication.
There
so
is.
So many threads linking. Oh, thank you so much for doing this with me.
That was my pleasure.
This is just so critical to stop this just horrible behavior between people.
Yes.
Thank you, dear. I appreciate this a lot. And I just fingers crossed for your continued strength. May you live forever. Okay.
Thank you.
Well, I'm just really, I'm almost mute. Okay. So until next time, I want to say thank you for listening. Thank you, Holly.
You're very welcome.
And please remember that there are so many ways to use the power of love letters in life, and every single love letter that you write will change a life somehow for someone. Even if you're the only one, I shouldn't say it like that, but if you're the one it changes for having written something positive, that's wonderful also. And if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, you don't, because writing a love letter is such a special occasion all on its own. So until next time, thank you for listening. Bye.